Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. CIBC Smart Everyday Banking helps you easily track your spending with confidence. Get $450 when you make the switch. Visit CIBC.com/smart. Now joining us in studio for the hour here, Canucks analyst on TV and here on the station, former NHL player. He is Landon Ferraro. What's going on, Landon?
Not too much. How are we doing?
We're doing all right. It's kind of that weird time of the year, you know, where it's like, well, they do have a chance, but boy, it would take an awful lot for them to make the playoffs at this point. Like, so we're in that position as media, and I think a lot of fans are in that position. From a player's perspective, when you find yourself at this time of the calendar and you are kind of in that spot in the standings where the Canucks are, what's it like? How difficult is it? How do you approach these next few games when you're in this position?
I mean, you just have to go for it still, right? Like, you still have technical, you know, hope.
Yeah.
So, like, you still keep going for that way. But, I mean, everyone in there, pretty much, you know, you can take out Hughes, maybe, but past that, like, everyone is still trying to prove something.
Yes.
For next year. And that doesn't mean they're looking past the games that they're playing right now, but if anything, it's getting them even more dialed in, because, you know, for guys that are in contract years, they're trying to make sure they finish strong. For the young kids that are in the lineup, like, this is a massive opportunity for them to get a, you know, a head start in the race to make the team next year out of camp. Like, there's still so much. And then, you know, even going back to Demko, like, it's, you know, it's been a really tough year for him, and he's come in and played really well, but, like, he wants to finish strong and have a good feeling going into summer instead of, you know, the depths that he's been in for the past, you know, a year, essentially.
From a team perspective, because Drance and I were saying yesterday, you know, you look at the effort level. It's not as if this road trip was disastrous or anything. They did a lot of good things. They did it. You know, a lot of guys played well, stepped up. You can feel good about that. You're also probably going to miss the playoffs, but how much from a team perspective can a good effort, even if it comes up short at this time of year, actually carry over and have a positive impact, you know, into what you do in the summer and then even when you're back with your team in training camp next year?
Huge. Like, it can be, again, like, this has been a really tough year for the Canucks and the individuals in it. And even though there has been a big changeover in guys coming up from Abbey, but, you know, from a guy that spent a good amount of time in the American League too, like, even when your team's doing great, like, you still feel a bit of what's going on up top. And, you know, they're really close
in
proximity as well. So, like, you know, the staff's coming down all the time, and just the feel of it is different. So when you can go out into summer on, like, a, you know, you've just played really well, and, you know, say it's one of the young kids, like, they come in, they play really good, they know that, you know, their exit meeting went great, and they know what they got to work on. Well, when they get in there, it's so much easier to put, like, that little bit extra into whatever you're doing, or when you finish your workout, do a little bit extra, because you have that real, not even hope anymore, but it's like, it's now my job to lose. Like, I've got the inside line. Like, it's not, I can't blame anyone else anymore. Like, it's on me, and it's a real motivator.
And I got to think it feels different. Like, I think of Aturatu, right? He played games at the beginning of the year for the team and did some good things, you know, ultimately spent most of the season in the AHL, but he comes up this time, earns more minutes, scores some goals, and not only is he having success and earning trust, but he's doing it in really important games where the team is going all out trying to win, and they, like, high stakes games. How much does that help a young player like him to look at it and say, like, hey, like, any NHL game is big, of course, but it is different doing it in those games than it is doing it, you know, in the first couple in October?
Well, for sure. I mean, it's a massive difference. You're like, your first few games, I mean, at least it was for me, and I'm sure it's different for other guys, especially the ones that were a lot better, but, like, you're just trying to survive, and, like, you're trying to make sure you do what you can and bring it to the team to show that, you know, you can play. But at the same time, like, for me at least, if there was a chance to make another play or kind of chip it in or eat the puck, like, I was taking option B and C. Like, I wasn't going to risk messing that up. So when you start getting into big pressure games and you're not just surviving anymore, but you're actually producing and moving up in the lineup and plugging up a hole that is needed and things like that. Like, you go into summer and it's not a, you know, I'm telling the media and I'm telling the management, you know, I think I can do this. It's now, I know I can do this. I've shown that I can. Obviously, there's things I still need to work on, but like, I can do it now. Like, I know I can.
With what we saw on this road trip, it's sort of an odd one to break down a little bit, Landon, because the results were not what they needed at this time of year. And yet their level of like consistent compete across the six games this trip was something we almost would have loved to see from this team in November, December, and January. How do you process that as a team, given the inevitable disappointment of where they find themselves, in contrast with sort of the process actually being as good as it's been all season of late?
I mean, I think honestly, like, a bit of it is, like, it's almost like a team that's been eliminated and then they start playing really well because
the pressure's
off. And I'm not saying that, like, they folded before that, but again, like, they've gotten some of their pieces back. I mean, obviously there's a couple out still, but the young kids have come in. They've got a good number of games under them now. But again, like, yeah, you're still technically in it and you're fighting for that. But you know the odds. They see it as well. And all you can do is, like, hey, just go out and play as hard as we can. Do everything as close to what we've talked about doing. And just see what happens. Because the other team, generally right now, is pressing beyond belief.
Right.
So if you can be a little more calm, like the Canucks have been playing, and they're playing such a good job through the neutral zone in a lot of these games. Like, the teams that are pushing and trying to press, like, that's where turnovers happen, and, you know, you can get some chances out of that.
Well, and I do wonder, you know, the effort we saw on the whole road trip, but also once Elias Pettersson or Nils Höglander were out of the lineup, if that idea of the pressure being off kind of comes in there too, right? Because, hey, you lose those guys who are playing really well or starting to play well, and they're two-thirds of your top line. And I mean, I think Sat said on the air when that news came down, he's like, oh, they're cooked, right? So all of a sudden people start writing you off, and then you're like, well, okay, we're being written off now, so we may as well just go out and try our best, and we can play a lot looser than maybe we were even with those guys in the lineup.
Well, yeah, and that's true for sure. But on top of that too, like, you know, the guys see and hear that stuff as well. And like, even knowing your top center's out, well, top couple centers are out and all of this, like, you know, we can play too. Like, you think Connor Garland's not going to see some of that stuff?
Yeah.
And try to, you know, be a difference maker in a game. And for even the young guys, they're like, okay, like, yes, we'd love to have those guys in the lineup, but like, this gave us our chance, and now it's our time to show what we're doing, as I punch my mic. And so, I mean, it's just little different things, right? Like, but it's all motivation.
Yeah, no doubt. And especially with the opportunity, I think, has been such a big thing for these young players stepping into the lineup, and especially the forwards, right? I mean, there's been like some of these past games, it's been a third of the forward group has been basically AHL guys who spent a long time at the AHL level. Who's stood out to you amongst that group in this recent stretch of games?
Well, I mean, obviously, like, it's easy to say Ratu. Like, it's,
yeah.
I mean, he's scored some goals and he's moving around. He's, you know, he's been good in the faceoff dot and so all of that. But I like just watching Lekker Mäki right now. Is I can see, you know, she has the goal a few nights ago and all that. But I think he's starting to figure out how to get a little more space for himself. Like, he's still young. He's still really light. So, and I'm saying this as a far less skilled player, but had the same issue of I was always really light. And I had an issue of I'm waiting for a puck to come around the wall and I know the D-man's charging down at me. Like, I can try and plant my feet as hard as I can. that 230-pound guy is going to roll over me, right? So, and like, but you see that in his game too, but like he's starting to find ways to like arrive at the puck at the exact right time instead of just standing there and waiting for it to come. So that makes it harder. Like now he's a moving target. He can slip out of that a little easier, but not only that, that just gets his feet moving a bit more to make the next play. So I think he's starting to find how to play his game a little bit more, and hopefully with a summer of, you know, a lot in the gym and gaining as much strength as he can, and just getting older, he naturally will, you know, put on a bit of that size as well. So, you know, I like where his game's moving.
You know, and with Lekkerimäki, I mean, we've had some fans text in frustrated with the minutes being lower for him, but how, like, in practice, how does that play out for a younger player? Because it's still NHL reps. And I get it, you know, a minute 33 or whatever in the third period against Winnipeg. But that's also, you know, the best team in the NHL. That's a tough spot to put a player in. I think back to Rick Tocchet saying, you know, it's not fair, basically, for us to have to rely on Lekkerimäki at this stage in his career. From a young player's perspective, a really young player's perspective, I mean, I'm sure it's frustrating at times for him, but how much value is there, even if you're only playing, you know, 7 minutes a game, to still being in those NHL situations?
Huge. And it's something that he'll look back on when he's older, for sure. And I say older as in even like 3-4 years down the line,
right,
of realizing what he gained out of this experience of being around. But I would also say, like, I would rather keep him a little, well, not a little, keep him hungry for minutes and always be wanting more, and, you know, have kind of have that carrot sticking out in front of him than chucking him in the top six against Winnipeg. And it's going to be a really tough matchup for him. So, you know, unless he's fully ready to grab that, and not, you give them the opportunity, but like his play has demanded him be moved up the lineup. You know, if he's, again, like he's young, like you can't make a kid be ready before mm-hmm. he is. And that doesn't mean that he's not going to be ready next year or in the future. It just, you know, he needs a little time. He's learning.
Ratu looks to me like a dude, and played, I mean, he played top line minutes 5-on-5 against the Jets on Sunday. Like, he was their most used center at 5-on-5. I actually kind of think they have to keep doing that here, Landon. Like, has he made the case to play higher up the lineup than, you know, your Bluger Amon types?
I think so. Just, I think he has a bit more of an offensive punch, yep. right? So, and not only that, but leaving those guys where they are, those are pretty good lines too, and that's where they're more comfortable, and those guys are really familiar with themselves. So I would look at it like you keep letting him stay in that spot, and if it becomes a little too much for him, you know, game after game, then you switch it out for a period or a game then. But no, like he's starting to grab more of the opportunity that's there for him, and not only that, but when he does make a mistake, like you can see the effort trying to fix it right away and not go make more of a mistake trying to fix it, but like he reads the game pretty well and, mm-hmm. and recovers. So no, like I think he's done a really good job, especially, but it's almost nice in the situation that he is, because, you know, with, you can pretty much say to himself as he's going out, like, of course this is important and I, you know, it's a massive opportunity, but like no one is expecting me to fill in and be Elias Pettersson that, you know, got the massive contract mm-hmm. all at once.
Or JT Miller or whoever.
Literally
right?
anyone yeah. up there buff, yeah. right? Like, it's just, hey, like, I've had a great year in the minors. I'm getting this opportunity. Like, they're expecting me to make a mistake once in a while. Like, I just got to go play.
I'm not going to bring up the switching, the turning the stick over thing, because you have the, Shreddy says you have the drinking game for that,
yeah, explain
right?
explain it this, actually.
I mean, it is definitely so blown a little bit out of proportion. It was just when he first got up and started doing it, it was every single time he took a faceoff, they were mentioning it. So I had to tell Shorty, I'm like, my buddies were, you know, we were dying laughing at it because like he's, oh, here it comes again. Or here's Ratu for another faceoff, and it's just over and over. So I had to tell him, like, I don't know if this is just stuck in your head now, and it's just like you got to do it. So, of course, he just out of nowhere decided to bring it up. I was making dinner when I was watching and heard that, too.
We all love Shorty, right? I mean, there are, like, watching the Amazon broadcast of the Canucks game last week, you know what I mean? Like, it's so good. They do such a great job in so many ways. And yet, I'm just like, be better with Shorthouse. and so, you know, but he has over the years had a couple of these where, like, do you remember Willie Mitchell's long reach?
Yes.
Willie Mitchell's long reach was mine and my buddy's version.
I think even back, because this is like, I feel bad picking on these guys. I mean, Shorty can handle it or whatever, because you talk for that many hours,
especially because Shorty listens.
Yeah, you're gonna repeat yourself. You know what I mean? Like, I remember Jim Houston.
Yeah,
anytime there was a game where there's a lot of penalties, the Canucks took a bunch of penalties early, then the Sedins would get on for a shift after, and he would say 100% without fail, Sedins haven't played much yet because they don't kill penalties. And that was for me. And he also, like, Jim Houston loved the long change in the second.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, Jim Houston's one of the best play-by-play voices of all time. He's incredible. You talk for that many hours, you're going to repeat yourself sometimes.
He also used Smeagol a lot. He'd talk about guys Smeagling. I used to love, that was mine for Jim Houston. Hey, look. This is the point, though, right? The good play-by-play guys become like company.
Yeah.
You know?
You're in on the joke.
Yeah, you're in on the joke, and it's
fun. That's what it's meant to be.
And I think bringing it up to fans so that they can put... So there's no actual rules to the drinking game.
It's literally, it started with, like, he said it again. He's like, I'm going to have to finish my drink. Because obviously it takes a little drink. And then the next one, it was like two buddies would take a drink. And then before you know it, everyone was kind of taking a drink. So, I mean, the hangout, and I can't remember what game it was, but it definitely wasn't one of their better of the year, right? So it made it a lot better. It was a good time. Shorty had her back that day.
I love this. Now people are just texting in other, like, ticks that Shorty has. But this one I appreciate. He's like, every close zone entry, Shorty says it's a moot point when the puck gets cleared out of the zone. But I think that's good.
I appreciate
that as well, that Shorty's on it, that he alerts you that, like, ooh, that was a close one, and we're still on watch until it goes back out of the zone.
Did you watch that Devils Wild OT yesterday? Anyone?
Yeah, they had a call back, right?
And it was the same guy that Demko robbed, Paul Cotter.
That's right.
So that poor guy should have, like, multiple OT winners. Now, he ended up scoring the shootout winner, so whatever, it's fine. Paul Cotter can survive this.
We can all sleep easy for Paul
Cotter.
There's
nothing worse when guys that don't score a ton get one pulled back. That is devastating.
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 But I knew the moment the entry happened.
You could so easy sitting on your couch watching it with, like, no movement going. It's
totally.
Just like, that is offside. That's by offside. About a foot and a half.
Or at, like, the very least, I know that it's like, there's a video guy down in the, being like, check it. Like, saying to the Hawkeye guy, check it.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Dylan Crawford just like, check it. And it ruins, especially in the playoffs, like, especially those sequences where offensive zone, stationary offensive zone attacking situations are so high stakes, and I should be on the edge of my seat, but I'm just scared that a big goal is going to be scored and it's going to have to come off the board, and it's going to be this whole thing that gets talked about.
This whole annoying
hours
thing.
It honestly ruins. So I do appreciate when broadcasters announce it, because to me it, like, shapes my experience.
Yeah, you're like, okay, I can let go of that now too. Like, it wasn't just me. Like, okay, we're all past it. We're in the neutral zone. We're fine.
Oh man,
it's no longer hanging over our heads as we try to enjoy this game.
Also, we should note that for all our messing with Shorty having verbal tics, like, I'm going to say the word juice 18 more times.
Oh yeah,
so for the course.
that's how it goes.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of juice. Okay, I'm curious, when Tocchet first took over from Bruce Boudreau during that 2023-24 season, there was this run of games where you could start to see what the Canucks were doing or going to be in terms of, like, being an actual organized, structurally sound defensive unit, even though the personnel wasn't there. And you had this, like, Ethan Bear, Quinn Hughes, Christian Willan, and Akito Hirose defense core, Juulsen, Guillaume Brisebois, that, like, punched well above their weight. And watching this team play of late, feels like they've got sort of a souped-up version of that blue line, and now they're just short forward talent. Are you seeing things that the Canucks are able to execute as a team as a result of this new-look blue line and the sort of the greater level of quality that they have on the back end?
I mean, for sure. First off, just getting out of their own end compared to the start of the season, even, like, there is a lot cleaner plays. Plays are getting killed into the defensive zone quicker. Like, Marcus Pedersen's stick in front of the net and around the D zone is unbelievable. Like, that thing just flies around. Derek Forbert's been playing really well. And so, I mean, the young kids have kind of rotated their, you know, done their little rotation, but at the same time, like, it doesn't seem like they've lost their rhythm when they come in. Like, they've all done really well, but coming out of the defensive zone's a big one. But I think offensively, I think the forwards, I don't want to say they trust them more, but they've seemed to involve them a lot more, and not in the drive down the wall, throw it off the boards for a point shot. But, like, I mean, even on this road trip, like, you saw Derek Forbert on the side of the net about three different times in the offensive zone. Like, that wasn't happening before. Like, there's a whole lot more movement, and maybe that is because the D is more mobile now as well. So I think it's really helped the offensive side, like in the offensive zone, being able to just involve them in the play more. It's not just Quinn Hughes that buzzes around the zone now. Like, they'll go in, they know that their forwards are going to be in the right spot, they're backed up. Like, they actually have layers now, whereas before it was so kind of one-dimensional. Like, it was drive down, they'd throw it off the boards, two guys would kind of go to the net, another one would start to come up high, but it was just kind of, they did it to do it. And now there seems to be almost a bit of fun in their offensive play. Like, they're feeling it a little bit and understanding where they can make their plays, where with the type of way that they play, that the openings kind of will happen. A lot of it's almost like the bumper in the off the power play, but like that D coming down the wall and the guy kind of sitting right off the faceoff dot, giving a quick give and go to that. It's like, so it's just pulling players and opening up space. But I think it's just the D have gotten a lot more mobile, but they move the puck quicker out of the D zone for sure.
I think there's something too, because, you know, I look at Tyler Myers, who's obviously a long-standing fixture on the Canucks blue line, and we all know Tyler Myers has offensive capability and he can do some things with the puck, but I think he's playing some of his best hockey recently for the Canucks. And I think it's just an illustration that it's not just getting new guys in, but you kind of, it's a rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing. Right now, all of a sudden, everyone else on the blue line is a little bit more steady, able to do some things, and I think it almost gives a guy like Tyler Myers a little more space to shine, a little more confidence that, hey, I can try some things, and I know I've got Marcus Pettersson who's going to have my back with that stick of his if it doesn't go as planned.
I think so. Like, I think that's a massive point to make, because for, you know, if we're using Myers specific, like, he has bounced around a decent amount this year with the injuries that have happened and all of that. Like, so he's had to play with a lot of different people. He's gotten, and in there, they've almost just had the rotation going. So, like, he's not that he's switching sides often, but it's different partners. You're getting the young partners. Like, it's a lot to worry about on top of just playing your game. And I think that speaks to where, you know, we were just kind of talking about, like, this team looks like they're playing the way they, you know, have been designed to play, and it's freer and all of that. Well, by those players coming in, whether it's trade or call-ups, like, they've brought new life into the team. They've brought more stability. Even if they've gone down in team overall, like, skill, you could say, like, but it's made the whole group better. Even, you know, again, for Myers, like, it lets him, I mean, randomly be the first on a forecheck once in a while, or, you know, he's always looking to do that wraparound, and if not, he keeps kind of climbing the wall and he somehow keeps finding the guy on the backside. Like, it's, but he's only able to do that if guys are in the right spots.
Yeah, and if guys have the confidence, and as you said, are just playing to an identity in a way that we didn't see so much earlier in the season. We'll take a break here. You can send your text in, 650-650. If you've got questions for Landon, hit us up in the Dunbar Lumber text line. There's actually one I want to run past you to start off the next segment. We'll do another in-person segment in studio here with Landon Ferraro next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. On Wednesday, Able Auctions will sell the contents of a closed cabinet shop, a BSA CNC machine, edge banders, shapers, a vacuum lift crane, dust collection equipment, compressors, wood stock, and a delivery van, all sold to the highest bidder. For information on this cabinet shop auction or 20 other auctions, go to ableauctions.ca. To get your business assets sold at auction, email sales@ableauctions.ca. That's sales@ableauctions.ca. All right, it is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Landon Ferraro in studio with us for another segment. And I had this question come in to the inbox earlier, Landon, and it says from Lotso, I would be curious if Landon ever played on a team that had a year as unpredictable as this one. That's from Lotso. And it is really just, I mean, you think back to the news stories, the sheer volume of news stories from training camp, starting with Thatcher Demko's absence and Dakota Joshua's cancer diagnosis, and just going from there, JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, but even just like player turnover. Like, I'm thinking back to, you know, game one of the season, and it's like Daniel Sprong is in the lineup, right? And Danton Heinen and Vincent Desharnais and JT Miller. And it's like just a very different team in October than it is now. And there's been so many ups and downs. Was there anything in your career that kind of compared to the eventfulness, the roller coaster nature of what we've seen from the Canucks this year?
Oh, I was thinking of it right now, actually. Not in pro. My last year junior, though, was in Everett with the Silver Tips, and Craig Hartsburg was our coach. And that year, especially because we're all young, like there was a lot that happened. He ended up having heart surgery, so he ended up leaving the team. His kid and Jay Verde, who's now assistant in Detroit, took over. They were really young. And then we had Ryan Murray, who was, did he end up going second overall?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, he's had a long NHL career. So obviously he was our big guy on the back end, and he went down with an ankle injury, and then it was just one after another. I ended up having surgery. It was a lot, and that's, again, with zero media coverage.
Right.
And trying to deal with any of that. And I remember sitting there as a 19-year-old, like, we're never going to get out of this year.
Yeah.
Like this, we can't escape it.
Yeah, what's the toll like? Because, I mean, hockey is a grind in the best of times. You know what I mean? Yeah. But, and then you throw in all that kind of stuff, and it must be really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, that wasn't a very good team. And with the injuries and everything else that went on, it made it a lot worse. And, like, it is not a good feeling going into a game. And sometimes you're thinking, like, we can play our absolute best, and that team needs to play just okay for us to have a chance. Like, that makes it really, really tough. And in those years, that was, you know, the Pickard brothers were both in the U.S. division with us and were unbelievable in net. So, like, there was some tough teams we did not have a chance against.
Fair enough.
When you think about this Canucks season, and, like, is there... How do you put what happened this year into context? In terms of, I think we understood that the Canucks were, you know, going to be hard-pressed to have 109 points in the regular season again, you know, but I think we also thought, hey, there's a chance that they'll be better entering the playoffs than they were last year. There's at least a chance of getting there. And everything that's transpired now, how do we have to think about this team going into the offseason?
Again, for every time I'm thinking about this team and, you know, the year that's been had and where they're at right now, I think by far the best thing that's come out of this is what they've found on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Through all of it, you know, they knew they had to get bring in another defenseman at some point. Like, that was said in, well, before training camp even started. And so they go and, you know, they fill that with Marcus Pettersson, but then they grab Mancini. Young Pettersson comes up. You know, Willander's still going to be coming out of college when he's done here. And, you know, like, all of a sudden, the part of your team that you're kind of worried about is your absolute strength. And not with guys where you're looking and you're like, oh, you know, they're all 32. Like, no, they're all really young. And, like, that alone is a massive boost going into the offseason, because now you're looking at, you know, how many of those realistically are you going to have in the lineup or like on the roster at the start of next year. And then on top of it with the forwards, how many of the young kids there? Because with every one of those, like, you're just grabbing more money to be able to play with, to grab other guys, and with where they're at cap wise and all of that, like, they're going to need the help a bit, you know, finding a bit of space. Yeah. So like, that's a good way to do it if they can handle it. So I would say out of this year, they found that their young players can take a step,
right,
and that their scouting staff can do a really good job finding a young player that just needs a bit of opportunity.
When you think about addressing sort of the top six forward gap, which we know is going to now be the priority, right? The new defenseman is a second line center, yes, or a top two line center. Let's put it that way, because there's significant uncertainty still around Elias Pettersson. And another top flight winger, especially with that sort of need exacerbated in the event that Brock Besser doesn't resign. When you think about that, like, let's put it in the context of Pew Suter, who's obviously played extraordinarily well. Can he be an answer in your mind to the top two line center question, even if it's just sort of a short-term band-aid?
I think that last part is the important
I was out that. Until you said band-aid.
Like, because he's had an unbelievable year, but is he going to be a 20-plus goal scorer from here on in? Like, I don't know if that's going to be the case. Like, I think he can consistently be a 15 to 20, like in that range, or, you know, 13 to 18, somewhere in there. But he does plug a lot of holes. But again, it all comes down to number for him, right? Like, if they can find a way to make it work, and he, well, I mean, I'm assuming would be willing to take a bit of a discount, then they can make that work, because he is a massive piece that has shown, like, I can play with literally anyone,
yeah,
and do a job here. And, you know, they obviously really like him as well. But if we're talking, okay, we're going to have to fill this next season because we are, you know, or if we have other things in the work or whatever it is, yeah, he could fill in. But if you're talking, this is our solution moving forward, like, it's just not enough.
Well, and the funny thing about Suter is he has earned such a significant raise, but a big part of his value is, as you said, that you can move him around and plug different holes in your lineup, right? And so I think you almost don't want to lock in, okay, he's our second line center, because that, like, a huge part of his value is his versatility. And then if he's locked in as your second line center, you can't just freely move him around as easily in the lineup. So I think you almost have to find that sweet spot where you give him the big raise, but you're still comfortable playing him in a third line role where you have that flexibility to say, hey, you know what? We need some defensive help on the wing on our top line. We're going to move him up right now. Hey, we need him to step up to 2C. We can do that. You need to keep him as that kind of wild card, I think, in your lineup to get the most out of what Pew Suter does for you.
Well, so what you just described would be him in the lineup next year, but knowing that Lekker Mackey's in your top six,
yeah,
and you're getting later into a game and you move
right
Suter up to take his, yeah, spot in that thing. Like, but the issue there, and not issue, but the thing to think about and discuss is, are we close enough to be able to have that type of player?
Sure. Is it a luxury,
right? Yeah,
basically?
Like, yeah. We need to get the players first, and that might be, who knows, who, maybe Lekker Mackey has an unbelievable summer and just getting this, like, a real stretch of games, he comes back and he takes a top six role.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that actually, like, then that makes that okay, because in NHL terms, he's making nothing. And then you can pay someone else a little bit more. Like, that's why, talking before, like, that's why it's so important to have those young guys in your lineup. Like, that affords you to be able to do things like that. But without the certainty of it, you either have to be able to, you know, be okay with that risk, or be okay with, we're going to let this build and get Lekker Mackey's minutes, and this is what we're doing this year. But either way, you got to know it going in.
So oftentimes in this market, when we get to points like this, where it's not over, it's looking a little grim. Well, I'm looking very grim.
It's looking more than a little grim.
It's looking grim for the Canucks making the playoffs, right? And usually that means that I'd be like over there in the corner behind a curtain, just like mashing the big red rebuild button, right? Time to rebuild, guys. Blow it up. And yet, I do think the Quinn Hughes dynamic changes that equation. But in trying to, we talked about this at length yesterday, Jamie and I, but in trying to sort of patch together a forward group with enough punch to complement what the Canucks have in goal, what the Canucks have on defense, in your view, do the Canucks need to be mindful of hedging or managing their risk at all going into next season, especially as it pertains to making sure that guys like DPD, Volander, and Lekaramäki remain here in the event that things don't perhaps go the way the organization would prefer them to in terms of retaining their best player?
Yeah, I mean, well, one, they don't, like, those guys aren't waiver eligible and yep. things like that as well, right? So, you know, I don't think they're going to be forcing these young kids into these spots if they can't actually do it. Like, they know where they're at too, and they, as much as this year was an absolute mess, like, it's just the easiest way to say that, it's like there's still pieces in there that you can see, especially with the way they're playing right now, of like, it's not saying to make them a contender right away, but to make them like a definite playoff team. Like, they're not that far away. So I don't think, just because of this year, like, I don't think this group is as far away from getting back to consistent hockey. And consistent hockey for this group is playoffs. Like, I don't think you guys would disagree with that. Like, if they play like they do, and it's not like this is a bump that you can't sustain. Like, this is just detailed, hardworking hockey. Like, that's a Rick Tocchet team to a T. So, I don't know. Like, it's, there's still, I don't want to say, like, there's still hope. But, like, I think there's a way that, especially with Abbotsford being so close, like, they can be on a bit of a rotation. You let them, like, especially with the defense, because there's going to be a lot of them. And, you know, there's still other guys in Abbotsford that have been, you know, having really good years as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, Kudryavtsev had a great camp and he's had a really good year down in Abbotsford. Not saying he's going to be pushing for a spot next year, but, like, that's another guy that's going to be fighting for games.
As certainly as a call-up option, for sure.
You know, so it's a way, and growing up in the Wings organization that, unless you, like, were an absolute stud, which even with, at the time, Gustav Nyquist and Thomas Tatar, they've had unbelievable careers. Like, they couldn't break the lineup in Detroit right away. Like, you were told, you got to go learn it down in Grand Rapids. So for this group here, like, there's nothing wrong with that either. Like, you let Mancini play for a bit. If he starts to slip a little, and it's, you know, because a full season's different than a couple months at the end of a year, well, you put him down, you bring someone else up. Like, you start moving it around, but I think that's the way you handle that, and you just focus on bringing in more experienced players that can help in the immediate.
Looking ahead to the summer also, I mean, another big item of business for the Canucks to deal with is, of course, going to be Rick Tocchet. Now, Drantz has reported, and I see Elliot Friedman reporting the same thing today, that they're saying, hey, look, we have the option for next year, so it's not as if he's a free agent. We'd love to extend him, but we're also totally comfortable exercising that option on Rick Tocchet for next year. But how important is it to get clarity and get something done quickly, like early in the offseason with Rick Tocchet? And I think ideally an extension. I don't, you know, as much as they say, hey, we're comfortable exercising the option, that's an awkward situation for everyone to be in. How important is it, not just for it to resolve at some point, but like early as a statement of, you know, stability, direction, alignment, all of those things, to be able to announce relatively soon here a Rick Tocchet extension with the team?
I mean, my guess would be that they get that done really quick. As soon as the season's done, especially now in this situation where, again, yes, like there's still a chance of playoffs and all of that, but you have a decent idea of where your season is going to end. So, like, they can dig into that a bit more, a bit earlier than they would have. And just looking at the two parties that are involved, you know, with Rutherford and Alvin and then Tocchet on the other side, like, I don't think any one of those three want to deal with this longer than I'm here or I'm not. Like, they're not going to want to be dealing with all of us media guys asking him for 2 months if he's coming back or not, right? Like, they're going to want that done right away. So I imagine that'll work, in whatever way it goes. But, if it is he's back, like, it's a massive thing because he's just been working with, especially with all these young guys. But if he's going to be starting the next year, like, you need whoever's going to be the guy needs to be starting the year next year, because there's too much starting from scratch that's going to be going on. Like, yeah, it's building off this year, but they're going to have, even more new guys in. Like, they're not going to have time to waste, a year or a year and a half of all of these young players' time. Like, that doesn't work for development. So if you pick your guy and talk it wants to stay, and that's the way you're going, like, he is your development coach for these players for their most important years, right? So I think it's the quicker it can get done is bigger, because especially I just remember what it was like when not knowing, especially when I was changing teams and you're like, who's going to be my coach? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot to think of, because it's, is he going to be someone that likes my play, or did the GM like the way that I played and the coach does not? Because that's happened, and that's not a very fun situation to walk in on.
The Andrei Kuzmenko, they call that.
Hey, Kuzmenko lighting it up for the LA Kings.
True.
He's going.
Did the Canucks get it wrong with Andrei Kuzmenko?
Get it right, then get it wrong.
I think they're
first. They got it right, then they got it wrong.
No, they were wrong the whole time.
I think they're okay with being wrong with that one for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. To be so clear. I think if you'd ask the Canucks, even at the depths of Kuzmenko struggling, can he help your team at $2.75 million?
Yeah, that's a totally different conversation.
They would have said, yeah.
Yeah.
But also, only on the power play. Anyway, one thing about this Tocchet thing that I think is interesting to me, anyway, is over a 17-year stretch in Carolina, Rutherford had three coaches. It's a pretty incredible level of stability. Maurice, and then Laviolette, and then when Laviolette left, he rehired Maurice, right? Like, this is not an executive.
So wait.
No, three guys, because
then Kurt Muller. Okay, yeah. I was like, well, that's wild, yeah.
And then they went to Pittsburgh. He got hired by Pittsburgh late in the hiring season, right? And all the NHL bench bosses were already off the market. So it was basically Willie Desjardins or Mike Johnston, a couple guys with Vancouver ties. Canucks got Willie Desjardins. Rutherford ended up with Mike Johnston. They ended up, that didn't work, and they brought in Mike Sullivan. And they had Sullivan until Rutherford left. We saw how much work, how many bullets this organization was willing to take to get their guy in Tocchet. And given sort of the track record there, I just really struggle to imagine that having got the coach they want, they're going to let that situation deteriorate.
Unravel, yeah.
Deteriorate. What are the advantages in your experience of having that level of sort of coaching continuity, of being that invested in one bench boss?
From my experience, yeah. I can't speak to it at all, because I think I played for more head coaches than I played on teams. I had three coaches in 4 years a junior, and then for the first 5 years of my career was a new coach.
Wow.
So, yeah, I jumped
That's
around
tough.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So what are the disadvantages
of that?
let's reverse
engineer it here.
I mean, I always sat there thinking about what it would be like. But, no, like, on the flip side of it, like, you're sitting there and there's so many times where even, like, a month into the new season, you mess up on the ice, something happens, and you either get told or you just know that just didn't look right. It wasn't good. You watch it later and you're like, I did what I was supposed to be doing last year. Like, there's so many different philosophies that start coming around that it starts to get really confusing and it's not like you're not focused in that moment. It's like, you do all your work in practice and in video and all of that stuff to make sure that by the time you get to the game, you just can let yourself take over. But if you've had that many different coaches in that short amount of time, like, you try and take the good pieces out of the, you know, the little good pieces you could learn through the year. But it's, you know, a year's not a very long time mm-hmm. either. It's like they're just trying to implement things. And then before you know it, well, your team's in the skids and he's gone again. And then it's the guy gets hired in the summer and you're trying to look at his past teams to see what he's going to be like and talk to guys. And then you're trying to figure that out. And then it's another month of training camp of him feeling the team out, you feeling him out. Like, it's a lot that it's another, not distraction, but it's another thing that gets thrown into a mix for a job that is already really hard to be at the top of.
Yeah, and I think about a player like Nils Höglander, who's obviously had some highs in the NHL and has also had a tough time figuring things out at different points. If the Canucks had a new coach next year, that would be his fourth NHL coach already in his career, right? In like five or six seasons in the NHL, if they get someone other than Rick Tocchet next year. Like, that's a lot of turnover for a young player who's still trying to, you know, I know he got the big extension, but he's still trying to find his way and really cement his role in the NHL. Okay, you thought we were going to get through it a whole hour without talking about Elias Pettersson, but you are not so lucky, Landon. So he's out right now. We're looking ahead to to after the season here.
Is he better than Pusu?
Not is he better. Has he had a better season? Anyways, we've heard that the Canucks are going to have this sit down. They're going to have this sit down with Elias Pettersson after the season, right? The, you know, come to Jesus moment, whatever you want to call it. The summit to figure things out. What's the plan going forward? If you were in that meeting, what do you want to hear from Elias Pettersson? What are your questions? Like, what do you want? What do you need out of that meeting? Because it can't be as simple as, hey, do you want to be here? Yes. Well, you've said that before, right? You've said that. You signed the contract. We know you want to be here, but it needs to go beyond that. Well, like, what would you be hoping to get out of an after-season meeting if you were in the Canucks' shoes here?
Honestly, like, if I'm sitting in that meeting and he's walking in, I think all I'd want to really hear is something really short of, I want to be the player that you signed me to be.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to do anything to do that. If that's stay here and work with everyone that's in our organization to make sure I'm in the best shape that I possibly can next year, I'm willing to do that. If it means go work with someone down in LA or Germany or wherever it is, like, just that desire to be that guy, like, that I don't think you need to hear really much else. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really, at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. And for that type of messaging to come out, I think would be huge for the management team to hear and then see followed through on.
I guess The sticking point for me is, because I think you're totally right, and I understand, you know, you don't want to spend too much time looking back at things that have already happened, but I would also be so curious to be like, what do you think has gone wrong in the, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it would be really difficult. Maybe this is just my own neuroses or whatever, but to go forward without having some sort of satisfactory explanation for why things got off the rails. You can't correct it unless you know what happened.
But I would say if they don't know that by now,
sure,
through
that's fair.
A bunch of, like, this has been a long year, like calendar year.
Yeah.
Those conversations have been happening for sure. Without knowing it and being in the room, you know those conversations. Yeah. So, like, I don't think that's where you need to focus anymore. Like, you know, it's in the past, but also not forgotten either. Like, mm-hmm. it can all stay back there, and I'm not saying, you know, it's going to be where everyone's going to be waiting to jump down your throat again. But, like, it is in the past. Like, you can't let someone move forward if you keep throwing.
Yeah, I get that.
So,
right?
Like,
you
to
can't
me,
keep rehashing
it is,
and
like,
getting
it's
angry
more
at
about
it again.
The commitment moving forward. Not saying he wasn't committed before, but to have someone come say, like, you know, whatever you guys think is the best for me being the player that I need to be next year and want to be, not just what you want me to be, but what I want to be. I think that would be the most powerful thing that you could hear out of that situation.
Yeah, I think that would go a long way. We'll see.
I wonder how hard it's going to be for management to just, like, decompress, look at this season, and avoid making an emotional decision
yes.
anywhere on the roster. Because I just know based on my temperament, I would have a really hard time with
lot,
that.
A lot of emotional reactions on the table. Yeah,
yeah.
There certainly could be.
But like, again, like you're talking about Rutherford and the coaches that he's had, like that's not a guy that makes emotional decisions. Like you're not telling me in all those years he was in Carolina, they didn't go on a bad stretch and he's like, I got to get this guy out of here.
I would say there's been a fair number of elements of Rutherford's teams losing like 3 games in a row in February and him being like, we are changing the mix. I actually think it's one of his competitive edges. So, like one thing that's kind of interesting about the season is how long they kind of sat in it.
Mm.
That's like almost the contrast with his historical record.
Yeah. I mean, but again, like, if we put ourselves back into why I don't,
but
really
I do think there's a difference between being like willing to act quickly and making like emotional.
Of course,
you know
course.
What I mean? Yeah,
yeah.
It's like he's just like, all right, this isn't working. Let's change it. Rather than like, oh, fingers crossed, maybe it'll start working if we just don't do anything.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just,
I also just think like that guy's done so good at like not putting himself in front of the teams that he's been involved
right.
with. Like he'll make a decision that's for the team, but like you could look at it as like he might have got himself out the door a little quick with
right.
that type of move.
Mm.
You know, but like if he thinks it's the best for the team moving forward, that's what he's gonna make. Like you look back over his track record, like I can't really think of a move that you're looking at like, oh, he's grasping at straws here. Like not many, and he's been in the game a long time.
He sure has. Lannon, awesome man, really appreciate it. Thank you for coming in, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
That is Lannon Ferraro, Canucks analyst here on the station and on TV, and of course former NHL player as well. One more segment coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Wednesday, Able Auctions will sell the contents of a closed cabinet shop, a BSA CNC machine, edge bander, shapers, a vacuum lift crane, dust collection equipment, compressors, wood stock, and a delivery van, all sold to the highest bidder. For information on this cabinet shop auction or 20 other auctions, go to ableauctions.ca. To get your business assets sold at auction, email sales@ableauctions.ca. That's sales@ableauctions.ca. Final segment of the show here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And the Canucks practiced at Rogers Arena today. Not sure if they're still on the ice or not. I have been keeping an eagle eye on Brendan Batchelor's Twitter feed, seeing if we're getting any further updates from practice, if they're off, if we're going to get any quotes from players or the coach, because there's a lot to dive into. I mean, I think most notably here with the health status of Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander. And again, the report from Brendan Batchelor was that Nils Höglander was on the ice in a non-contact jersey. No sign of Elias Pettersson. Health status of Filip Hedl of interest as well. Health status of Kevin Lankinen. What was he dealing with on this last road trip? How does Tocchet plan to approach this last stretch of games, final 8 games remaining on the Canucks calendar with them still barely clinging to a playoff hope? So hopefully we'll get some audio or at least some quotes to chew on here from Rick Tocchet or for some Canucks players as they wrap up practice at Rogers Arena. Batch did tweet the lines for us, so I can at least pass that along to you. That's right. Nothing gets the people going more than Batch tweeting the lines on a practice day with the Canucks barely alive in the playoff race. Anyways, here it is. Pugh Suter remains your number one C, skating between Jake DeBrusk and Brock Besser on the top line. Teddy
Bluger.
Some
might say he's having a better season than Elias Pettersson.
Some might say that. Teddy Bluger with Drew O'Connor and Connor Garland. Neil Zaman with Linus Karlsson and Jonathan Lekker-Mackey. Aturatu on the fourth line, but really the third line based on ice time with Dakota Joshua and Kiefer Sherwood. Nils Höglander was the extra. On the blue line, it's Hughes and Myers. It's Marcus Pettersson with Filip Hronek. It's Derek Forbort with Elias Pettersson, Junior Pettersson, and Victor Mancini is the extra. That is the latest from Brendan Batchelor at practice. And, as I was saying there, curious to see what kind of extra information we get from Rick Tocchet on the various health questions, especially from the team.
Which is beginning to trickle in now. Harmon Dial of The Athletic noting that Tocchet said that Filip Hedl has had good days and bad days with his concussion. He said the odds are likely stacked against him returning to the Canucks lineup this season.
That's tough. That's really tough. Not that he was lighting the world on fire in terms of production. Just the element of speed.
Yeah.
The ability to carry the puck through the neutral zone, enter the zone
Eight
with
minutes.
Control.
Yep.
Like, again, it wasn't converting into goals, but they were like chances and chances at chances in a way that a lot of guys weren't providing for the Canucks throughout this season.
Not to mention, the long-term questions. I mean, that was the big question when the Canucks acquired Filip Hedl. The club did a lot of homework. There was a belief that there was mitigating circumstances that enhanced the club's comfort, that, the lengthy absences that have dogged Hedl throughout his career were in the past, that the risk was perhaps not as much as was being made of in public by the media. And, we kind of have seen this story before, unfortunately, in this market with, Michael Ferland and Tucker Pullman
that, yeah.
As these traumatic brain injuries multiply, right? The risk of further injury or sustaining dealing with symptoms going forward is heightened. Like, we've seen that. So that's where we don't want to get to.
The road back gets even tougher.
Right. Yeah. And that's where we don't want to get to with Filip Hedl. So it's just a really tough break for a guy who was an awful lot of fun to watch.
Yes.
And, who I think has game. Like, I meaningfully believe that Filip Hedl has game and can help this team win, but he'll need to be in the lineup.
Well, and how much are we going to talk for the rest of our show for the next 3 months into the summer, going into training camp next year, about the need for the Canucks to be a faster, more dynamic, off the rush attacking team, more creative team? And again, Filip Hedl's not the answer at in your top six for that. But if you want to build it out just beyond your top six, that's a pretty nice third line center to have, a guy who ticks a lot of those boxes farther down your lineup. And I do wonder, we've been talking about Pugh Suter a lot, obviously. What does his next contract look like? Does it make sense for the Canucks? So you have Filip Hedl, 2 more years at $4.4 million, just over $4.4 million. Are you comfortable doing another similar salary, probably a bit lesser, maybe in that $4 million range, for Pugh Suter down the middle? But then also knowing that you have to go out and add at least one more really high-end center in particular, right? Like, I don't think you're comfortable if your plan is to rework this roster into a contender as soon as next year. If that's your goal and you're going to stretch and try to do everything you possibly can to do that, I don't think you're comfortable going into next season with your middle six Cs being Pugh Suter and Filip Hedl. So if that's the case, can you afford to have both of them on the roster at the same time? If one of them is moving to wing or playing somewhere else in the lineup, and one of them will be your third line center. Or the other question is, how much does Filip Hedl's health situation play into that? Like, are you even factoring him in to your lineup decisions next year? Are you saying, no, don't worry, he'll be a part of it? Or are you kind of assuming we're going to have to figure things out with Filip Hedl? I do wonder how it intersects with the Pugh Suter decision that the Canucks have to make here before July 1st.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the test case for Pugh Suter, is ultimately this is the guy that raises the floor. This is the best insurance money can buy. Tocchet, by the way, added of Elias Pettersson that he's skated once or twice. This is center Elias Pettersson. Sounded hopeful that Pettersson may return at some point before the season ends. So that's good.
Hopeful.
Tocchet said Höglander probably closer to returning than Pettersson. Should be noted that while Höglander joined his teammates in a non-contact jersey, looked like he was a limited participant, not fully taking part in all drills over the course of practice. Media reporting as well, of course, that he was, the 13th forward. So that would put him on the very doubtful side for Wednesday anyway.
Yes.
And we'll see with the club.
Now they do have
weekend back to back.
They do have the Tuesday, 2 days after the Wednesday game.
Yep.
So wouldn't be surprised to see Nils Höglander in one of the weekend games, Saturday against the Ducks, Sunday against Vegas. Although I will say, if he's saying like likely to return before Pettersson, but Pettersson's only likely, like not a lock to return before the season, does that maybe stretch the timeline for Hoglander? Or I don't know. I'm probably reading a little bit too finely into it for Rick Tocchet there. But that's a lot of the meat of the injury-related questions from Rick Tocchet.
And of course, I think the I know the audience's appetite to discuss Canucks playoff odds has like pretty much dwindled.
It's very small
at record pace, but you know, this is the thing, right? Like, add this as a leg to the parlay, is that it's not the Canucks with Elias Pettersson at 100% and on, you know, Nils Höglander in the lineup and Filip Hedl providing reinforcements here that is going to need to go on this unthinkable heater to make the playoffs. Like, the Canucks are going to be rolling with, for at least the near term, you know, at least these two quote unquote winnable games against Seattle and Ducks teams that are by no means tap in victories for this club, especially in this state. You know, I do think that, you know, that's the added layer of complexity here. That's the added factor that this is not going to be the Canucks at their best, most likely from a, you know, lineup integrity standpoint.
We were talking about Elias Pettersson and the, you know, the big summit we expect the Canucks to have with Elias Pettersson after the season with Landon Ferraro towards the end of our conversation with him. And, you know, I find that such a fascinating, it's going to be an incredibly difficult decision, I think, for the Canucks to make one way or another on Elias Pettersson. Because again, even it's great to have that big sit down. There's only so much you can actually get out of it, right? It's just words. You need to see the actions. You need to see the actual results on the ice. We did have a few people text in that, and Keith and Kit says Petey should spend the summer working out with Hughes and his brothers and that whole crew. Somebody else saying EP40 should go to Michigan and train with the Hughes crew. I think there are worse ideas, certainly. If you want a statement of not just words, but real intent of, okay, you're all in on doing, as Landon said, being the player that you signed him to be. You're all in on being the co-best player. Like, that's what he was signed to be. And now Quinn Hughes has taken this massive step to kind of elevate to the clear best player. But, like, if you're all in on being the best forward on this team as a Stanley Cup contender, and you know you have that relationship with Hughes, like, I see a lot of wisdom there. Go put in the work that he does. Go learn with him. Go practice with him. There could be worse ways to demonstrate your commitment as Elias Pettersson to doing what this team needs you to do and, you know, remaining on the roster beyond this summer, as they do still have the decision on potentially trading him coming up this year.
Yeah, probably not wise then to note that the last time Pettersson spent time in Michigan in the offseason was before that final Travis Green season, yep, where he struggled.
Now, that was the holdout too, though.
Yes.
And then he was also dealing with the injury.
Yes, the wrist.
So there was other things going on there.
There was a lot going on there, yeah. There always is. It's the Vancouver Canucks.
There is always.
Hey, that situation's complicated and requires more context
There's
to unpack.
Always so much going on.
You mean the Vancouver Canucks situation?
The classic Vancouver Canucks. That's just how they do.
Yeah, I mean, keeps us in business, I suppose.
Yeah, it sure does. What else would you be kind of interested to hear? I don't know if we're going to get the audio in to play from Rick Tocchet before the end of our show here.
We're working on it.
Ooh, maybe we will.
Maybe.
But I mean, like, we obviously wanted to get the, you know, the hard news stuff, right? The injury stuff. But I'm going to be pretty fascinated to hear what he says about this moment in time for his team, right? And how he's grappling with a lot of the questions that you and I have been tackling over the last couple of days, right? Like, how do you look at,
he's going to love that.
How do you look at a team that's played pretty well, done some really good things, but is also almost certainly going to end up with a massively disappointing season here to show for what they've done well over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, that's the tough part is, I think you can credibly argue that the Canucks form of late, especially on this road trip, was at a level where, had they performed, you know, like that all season, we would be having a very different conversation,
yep,
about where this club's season is headed. They didn't, though, right? Like, they didn't, and that opportunity's gone. Like, it's not coming back. So is that a positive? Is it a positive that this club found their game at this stage, or is it a source of frustration for Tocchet? Right?
Yeah.
It's like we had this opportunity in front of us, and like that's something I'd, and then also, you know, I'd imagine he will be asked about his contract in the wake of Friedman's reporting today. And you know what the right answer is?
What? Well, he's already said.
The right answer is, I'm sorry, guys. I'm focused on the season. Yeah, I'm not going to answer questions about that.
He's already said that. Who told that to me in Bruff?
I know.
He was like, yeah, I'm trying to get in the playoffs here.
Yeah.
And I think until they're
But he can't, now he shouldn't say that because that expires.
Well, I think it's still live enough now until they're mathematically eliminated.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. It's, so you're saying he needs the new line to push
and
it
then
back.
He has to. No, yeah. I don't think you. I'm not focused on making the playoffs. I'm not going to be talking about that during the season. I've already explained why. I'm too focused on doing my best.
I'm trying to help this team.
And that's it. And just never say anything other than that, because there's absolutely no benefit to unpacking it beyond the comment that he's already given.
I do wonder, and Landon was saying, you know, he expects them to get it done pretty quickly. Who knows, frankly? And I mean, some of the stuff we've been hearing that, hey, it's going to be a conversation about the roster and everything as well. I do wonder if not necessarily from a Tocchet commenting on it publicly perspective, but just from the ability of the two sides to sit down and really get working on it. If them falling out of the playoff race does change, like when they're able to do that, is there a chance we hear something official or at least get some sort of meaningful update at the year end press conference when they do that at the end of the regular season? It's at least a potentially different timeline than if they'd been into it right to the end of the season or even made the playoffs. But it sounds like a pretty complicated situation. And, you know, Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texted in, I want to know, though, if Drance really thinks the team would use their club option, even if Tocchet wants to leave. He says, it seems insane to me to do that. But the way this management group has treated a number of individuals, I wouldn't put it past them to chain Tocchet to the floor until Quinn either says he's re-signing or leaving. Now,
it's not chaining a guy to the floor, but more than that,
my interpretation of this, of your reporting and everything, is like, more than anything, it's a leverage thing.
Correct.
Like, they just want to make sure, like, hey guys, he's not a free agent.
Yeah. We have rights here.
And I think if you were to map what their preference is, like, far and away, getting him signed to an extension is way, way better.
Oh, of course. No. But it, more than that, it's like, we want to get this guy signed to an extension. That's our preference. But what's crucial to note here is he's not an unrestricted free agent, so we're not going to bargain on those terms, right? Like, this is hardball. This is throwing negotiating weight around. And oftentimes, Jamie, as we've said many times on this program over the years, when the elbows get sharpest, that's sometimes a sign of progress, even if it looks, you know, what's the opposite of placid? I don't know why I'm playing the opposite word game. Even if it looks
stormy.
Yeah, even if it looks
choppy water.
There you go. Even if it looks choppy on the surface.
Yeah. Yeah, I still...
You did much better than not knowing what spendthrift meant.
Yeah, that's true. Wow, what an embarrassment that was for me. I would still be shocked, if the result is he coaches here on the option year next year. That would be a very, very surprising development to me. I think that's a leverage play and just making sure everyone understands that, like, he can't just go to Philly, even if that's what he really wanted and that's what they really wanted. They can't make him an offer to lure him away from the Canucks. They have a strong position here and they're going to play it. And then it'll just be a matter of convincing him if he wants to stay and trying to figure out alignment on the roster, alignment on the process, alignment on the money, obviously, as well. And we've heard that, you know, they might have to go to a spot where they haven't gone to with coaches in terms of salary for a while.
They went there with Torts.
Yeah, that's true.
Torts was $4 million.
That's a while ago now.
I know, but yeah. I'm just saying, like, coaches' salaries have been flat. There was a moment, an inflationary moment, when Mike Babcock got hired, you know, by the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Canucks kind of ducked it because they had Travis Green employed at the time. And for the most part, like, you know, that these salaries have stayed the same. Revenues have exploded for the league, right? We're back to teams actually having to have the cap accelerate in line with revenue, something that, by the way, despite the fact that obviously the pandemic was lean from a cash flow perspective for these teams, not like their valuation plummeted by any means, but also like then coming out of it in normal times, player personnel salaries have been flat for years while the revenue levels of the league exploded. There's reports of a new broadcast deal that's like massive.
Don't know anything about that.
Mind-blowingly significant. Fingers crossed.
Got no idea what you're talking about.
And, you know, I mean, if you believe that Rick Tocchet provides you a competitive edge, even 2%, 2% above average.
Yeah.
He's worth double $5 million. Given the actual value of this franchise and the value of 2% extra points per year from a playoff revenue perspective, from a overall achievement record, I mean, what are we talking about? This should be open shut. Like, why wouldn't
it? Certainly shouldn't come down to money.
I'm not saying you need to pay him top of the market either. Like, I don't think he needs to be paid like, you know, Pete DeBoer or Bruce Cassidy or guys who've won Stanley Cups. Like, there's a tier below that. You know, that makes sense, I think. We're closer to like Montgomery and company, other Jack Adams winners. I mean, we're talking about the cost of like a good third line player or a good fourth line player. Like,
it would be
ridiculous.
It would be very weird if money was the sticking point here.
It makes no sense.
It would be a very, especially considering, as you pointed out to Landon earlier, like how much work they put into getting him here.
Yeah.
How much they wanted him.
I think this is one that we're going to spend a bunch of time talking about.
And then it's going to get sorted out.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's just.
But that's how we do.
I know.
The question is just when, to me, that it gets sorted out. And what the what the resolution looks like as well. Like, term will be a really interesting one to me, especially with the uncertainty around Quinn Hughes' deal. You know, like, is there a chance it's, you buy out the option year and you do like a 2-year deal with a mutual option at the other side, right? Something like that, yeah. Potentially.
I'd add this, like, you know, between the sort of last really fun era of Canucks hockey, 1999, the start of the Mark Crawford era, right? That like Burke build into sort of the Dave Nonis years, into the Mike Gillis golden years, right? The Canucks across a 17-year period had two coaches, Crawford and Alain Vigneault. Now, I haven't really enjoyed what's happened since.
No.
Five coaches across the 10 years since. Torts for a year, Desjardins for three, which was too many. Travis Green for four, Boudreaux for 1.5. Tocchet. You're going to go to a sixth coach?
Yeah.
Across a, you know, I guess it'd be a 15-year span, but a sixth coach across a 15-year span, like, that to me is all, like, you don't even need to say like the Canucks record or how many times they've made the playoffs or haven't been a consecutive playoff team, haven't made the playoffs in consecutive years in that span of time across a full season. Like, six coaches in 15 years. You can leave it there. That says it all. This organization should value stability, in my mind anyway, especially given the level of achievement that Tocchet has hit here.
By the way, Tyler texts in that Tocchet should give the reverse Tortorella answer. I am focused on coaching the young guys through these meaningful games. It's like, I am too interested in learning how to coach in this situation.
That would be awesome.
To talk contract with you guys. The reverse Tortorella. That's fantastic. Thanks for listening. Thanks for texting in again. You'll be able to hear full commentary from Rick Tocchet later on the People Show with Bick. My gift to him, 10 minutes of Tocchet audio, hot off the presses for him to play later on in the show. Make sure you tune in for that. And we will be back tomorrow on a Crossover Wednesday here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.